You're listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast. That's it. Up from the grave he arose. Do you remember that song?
I do. Yep. It's been like 30 years since I've heard it, though.
Yeah, it's. I remember years ago we didn't do that song on Easter Sunday. Oh, and I got quite the complaint. It was funny. We have to sing that song on Easter. I'm like, do we though? Is it like...
we sang it last year. It's still true.
Is it a
rule? We didn't put him back.
He arose, the victor of the... whatever. Anyways.
Church people are funny about stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. It is entertaining. But thanks for tuning in. This is episode 140. And the reason I am singing about the resurrection is because Easter just happened. Did you guys have... a good...
Well, not just. It was like 2,000-ish years ago, but...
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
Dad joke.
Yeah.
He's got three kids now.
Up from the grave, his dad jokes rose again.
Do you guys have a good Easter weekend? Do you guys have any family traditions that are like, this is what we do on Easter?
We do get together with family, Aaron and I. If you can consider that a tradition, we don't just become hermits for Easter weekend. We actually do go out, spend time with family. This year, though, before Easter, we did like a mini Passover-ish meal. I have funny like quotation marks with my hands.
Okay.
For those who can't see it, we took all the pieces of the Passover except for sacrificing the lamb and spreading it on the doorpost. That's the only part we omitted. Didn't want to get the cops called on us kind of thing. So... but we did all the things and then went through and with our life group actually just discussed what each element was meant to call back in an Israelite's mind. And then what we did is we moved forward to like, this is how Jesus fulfilled those things. This is what...
that's cool.
Yeah. It was actually a really cool experience.
That's the first year you've kind of done that specific thing.
But it was definitely the kind of thing that after it was all said and done, Aaron and I kind of looked at each other and we were like, that was... pretty cool to actually do that. And we did it an extra week in advance, so we actually didn't do it on Passover, but we did it the week before to try and give ourselves time to think about what was coming and what Jesus had done.
So
that was really cool. I think that might be a tradition for us now.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Shalom.
Yeah.
So sorry. I'm sorry. How about you? Good weekend with the fam?
Yeah, we didn't do anything Jewish. No, I'm joking. We really enjoyed just a family dinner. We really enjoyed the Good Friday service.
Yeah.
And seeing people come to church that I hadn't seen in a while was pretty neat. Colleagues coming to church that we were able to talk about it before Good Friday and then afterwards. And seeing them again on Saturday evening for the service was awesome.
Yeah.
So really appreciated that. And I really enjoy preparing dinner for our family and getting to talk about what that means for the weekend. Mm. It was really great having the time off with the kids. Yeah. I just enjoy long weekends and trying to make the most out of them. So it was just a really nice day.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, my weekend was super relaxing and... It's funny you said the thing. I think my sister does the same thing with her kids on like the Thursday.
Yep.
They do the like unleavened bread and the bitter herbs. And then she just
call it a Seder meal.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Passover Seder.
I know some churches, there's a, it's called Maundy Thursday. Maundy. I know some churches, my dad's church in Souk used to not have a Good Friday service.
Mm.
They would have a Maundy. And I was always a little jerk who was like, Monday, Thursday, what does that mean? He's like, but some churches actually do their, it would be the equivalent of a Good Friday service, but they just do it on Thursday.
Interesting.
And apparently in church history, that used to be a thing. Churches would do Monday, Thursday, celebrate communion, like the Passover communion meal.
Yeah.
And just remember the night Jesus was betrayed. And so when you said that, I'm like, oh, yeah, my sister does that or has done that. I don't know if they do it every year.
Yeah.
And some churches do a specific, like, Thursday night communion thing to remember the Last Supper. So, but no, my weekend was a little busy.
What were you up to?
Just
working all weekend.
People are probably like, finally working hard. But yeah, we had our two Good Friday services, which were really good. And then it's funny because it always throws me off, because then I go home and my brain is telling me it's Sunday because you just preached twice.
Right.
And then I get up Saturday, and then you're kind of getting into evening service mode. And so we had a good Monday off.
Good.
Because you preach five times over the weekend, and it was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Lots of people here, which was lots of new people, which was super exciting. I think we had 1,000 people here on the between our Easter services, which is just like, that's not Good Friday. That's just Saturday night and two Sundays, which was, I was just curious because I'm like, I wonder how many extra people came.
Yeah.
And then you like add it up. I'm like, holy smokes, that's a lot of extra people. Yeah. So that's super.
Like a couple hundred extra over the normal average weekend?
We would be between 600 and 700 a weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So between 300 and 400 extra people came.
Which that's cool. A lot of extra people.
It's a lot of extra people. Like a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's encouraging because we had printed invites and told people, hey, invite your family and friends. And I think they did. So
that's cool.
Super cool. And then, Monday we just kind of, relaxed and didn't do a whole lot. And my wife likes to do the, like, let's paint Easter eggs. And so we did all that kind of stuff. And it's fun. Her mom had given her an Easter hunt, like Easter egg hunt kit. But the eggs, they're all those, like, the plastic ones that open, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then there's all of these like little things connected to the Bible story.
Oh.
So it's such an American church thing. It makes me laugh because it comes in a carton.
I'm pretty sure my mom has one.
And they have all the egg, and then you open it and you're like, oh, there's this like leather whip. What does that remind us of? And so then my wife throws some chocolate ones in because I know my kids would be terribly disappointed if that was all of it.
Sure.
But we did. We opened it up, and it's kind of fun seeing, like, you just pull out this thing. Oh, this cloth. What does that mean? All, and you can see his brain trying to be like, yeah, they wrapped his body, right? Right. That's the wrap on the body. Anyways.
I think I could be wrong about this, but I think my family never actually did an Easter egg hunt, like, when I was growing up. If we did, it was like because we went to someone else's house and they were doing one. And it was like, okay, yeah, I guess you can participate. But I want to say I do remember doing an Easter egg hunt at my house one time for Bible study. And we had those
resurrection eggs.
So once you all found it, nobody could open them until you brought them there. And then
they're
mom,
numbered. Yeah. Yeah. So it's the total.
That's like getting baby clothes for Jesus at Christmas time. Like families are cool with Christmas presents, but don't touch Easter. It's kind of funny. Yeah. You probably still got a Christmas present though, right?
Yeah.
No.
Why?
No. No. My mom was like, we took that money and sent it to Israel. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Jesus.
So anyways, we want to talk.
On that vein though, like after Easter, yeah.
Yeah. So we want to talk this morning about the resurrection. Cam sent a text and I think it just kind of opens up a whole conversation. I'm curious for you guys. Did you ever struggle with, okay, so I'll preface it this way. On the message most Easters is kind of like, hey, look, there's like proof that he was raised from the dead. Usually, not always, but usually it's kind of like, why can we trust that this happened?
Yeah.
Have you guys ever, either grown up or in your adult life, struggled with the resurrection or like the proof,
like,
of it,
struggled with the thought that Jesus rose from the grave,
or is
and
it
how that could be possible?
Yeah. Or like the, I have to have faith in that. Did it actually happen? Like, was that ever, did you guys ever do like a deep dive into like all the evidences of like, has that ever been a struggle for you, or has it just been like a, yeah, I believe it's true?
I have not struggled with it personally.
Sure.
Because I think I've been given a gift of faith, but I can empathize and appreciate with other people's struggle and inconsistencies and just the miraculous nature of it. Because even so, I guess what prompted this kind of thought is I'm sitting there throughout the Easter weekend looking at people who I know, for two people I know, don't follow the Lord. And it's awesome that they came, but I'm just thinking, how are they receiving this?
Yeah.
Because I was blessed with hearing it from a young age and got there myself as an adult, but it wasn't foreign. But for one person, a couple of rows in front of me, I could see like mind blown. And I don't know if at some point it was like, okay, this is all too much, or if the Lord was doing something in their heart and mind to allow for them and this truth to, you know, collide in a way that is maybe felt genuine. Because we know that, you know, the gospel can seem foolish to those who are lost. And so, and we also wrestle with the tension of, no, not everyone's called at any given time just because they're here.
Right.
And so that's what started prompting these thoughts. And then naturally, in a sermon, you cannot cover every basis of every context for every story.
Yeah.
So even like talking about going to the women going to the tomb the next day, a critical mind might say, how are they going to roll the stone? And I actually flip back to the back of the gospel. I'm like, right, they weren't certain of how they were going to move it. But that's why Roman guards were assigned there. And so theoretically, the disciples could have moved the stone. Obviously, a few men could have moved that. And when you start like looking at the story and then thinking back to, wait, people rose out of their graves? Like, who opened the door for them?
Yeah.
You know, but that would imply like their body got up inside the tomb and they somehow escaped their own tomb. Or did they appear outside of their tomb in spirit and then became flesh? And how come no one thought to add those stories to the storyline? And so my mind just kind of goes like that. And with the undergirding of, I'm blessed with the gift of faith that I don't struggle with its sincerity, but there is just natural things missing in the storyline that a critical mind who's really kind of unpacking it would struggle with. Yeah. And so I think, that led to the thought of going into the, you know, we talked about the disciples and their doubt afterwards because their expectations were not met, because their expectations were wrong, misguided. And so then I started thinking about like, is doubt in opposition to faith, or is doubt just a natural place that we can be in while we're trying to unpack maybe having unrealistic expectations of who God was or is, and how that is intersecting with our lives. And so that's, I think, what prompted the thought of,
yeah,
there could be a lot of people who think I shouldn't doubt because that means I don't have faith.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's bad to unpack hard questions about the scripture and talk about it in a context like this, where it's not like church history. If you have a question that's really hard, you're a sinner.
Yeah.
And if you have a question that seems to doubt the gospel, then that's a bad place to rest in. I don't think it is, because I don't think it's the opposite of faith. I think it's just okay to unpack hard questions. And so that is what kind of prompted the thought. And then in Luke, this where Jesus reveals himself post-resurrection to what's implied as two disciples, but one's named who's not even a disciple. And and then it goes on, and we'll share the story to, you know, then they have the dinner and their eyes are revealed at the Lord's Supper. It's like, were they at the Lord's Supper? Mm. You know, your picture only has 13 guests. Were the other side of the table, everyone, you know, on a rest break? Were there more people there? Mm. So those kind of questions are fun to think about. And I think that that's what we're hoping to do this morning.
Yeah. How about you, Carland?
Yeah, I'm trying to, as you're talking about doubt, I was trying to think of like, how do I define doubt in this kind of topic? Because like, have I questioned it? Yeah, there's been moments where, you know, it sounds too casual, but honestly, there's moments where I'm going about my life and suddenly it'll come to mind where it's like, I believe that a dead guy was raised from the like a guy who was living, died, rose again, and that's what saves me? That's weird. Am I sure I believe that?
Yeah.
Look around at everybody else. It's like, doesn't seem like anybody else believes that. Like, that's kind of wacky.
Yeah.
But it's usually in those moments that graciously God comforts me. And I don't know how to say it aside from it does feel like his presence usually comes and is just like, yeah, no, but I'm like, have faith that this is true. So I think maybe what you're saying of having the gift of faith, I think most Christians probably do if you continue on in your faith. If you come up with doubts where you're like, do I actually believe that? And God allows you to work through it. even in small ways in that day and move forward, then I would say you've been gifted with faith to move forward.
Yeah.
Faith in God is something that I think is contrary to our baseline human nature. The temptation in the garden was to be gods and to have your own, like, to be gods of your own and have your own wisdom on how to do things. And so the gospel is foolish to people who don't believe, because it's not how we would wisely bring salvation to mankind.
Right.
So when God has taken back those scales, I think it's pretty normal to experience moments of like, do I actually believe that?
Yeah.
But again, like Cameron said, I don't know that that's a negative thing.
Yeah. I don't think doubt is the same as unbelief. I think unbelief is like, I'm rejecting this because I don't believe it. I think doubt is a normal response. Like it says even at the end of Matthew 28, when all the disciples come together to Jesus and some still doubted. And I'm like, but you've seen Jesus.
Yeah.
And yet some of them were still going, I think probably the doubts weren't they might have been doubts on like, what do we do now? Sure. Like, what does this even mean? I'm so confused. Like, but they still went to meet Jesus told them, come meet me in Galilee. They still went. So it wasn't unbelief going, I'm not going there because this is all a scam. I think I'm gonna go, but I don't know what this all means. Like, so I think doubt is not necessarily the same as like a rejection or an unbelief. It's like I'm wrestling through like the reality of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I've had, it wasn't this last Easter, but I've had times preaching where I've had the same thoughts that you just said.
Yeah.
As I'm talking, going, no one's going to
believe. This is kind of weird.
No one's going to believe in this. This sounds crazy. Like, because it does. It totally does.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's the wisdom of God versus the wisdom of the world. So to say that like, okay, yeah, God became a person and then died on a cross and then was raised from the dead and you believe in that and that's what saves you, according to the world and every other religion, that's nuts. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've had those same moments amid preaching being like, no one's going to believe this. This sounds crazy.
I think maybe our context for the word doubt isn't actually helpful in these conversations, at least in our cultural context, because doubt would infer unbelief, I think, in most people's minds, where it's like, well, if you don't believe 100%, then do you actually believe, right?
Right.
Whereas I think the way you're talking about it, Cameron, doubt is something that God can almost use as an exercise for you to grow your ability to trust him, if that makes sense. Not that it's a muscle we flex that faith is, but like it's an exercise that, you know, if you come up on those thoughts and you say, no, this is true, there should be a strengthening of resolve in your faith. There should be a coming out on the other side. I would use the words, because I don't know what better words to use, a stronger faith, because you've gone through those moments, I would argue.
I think it stems from the way I was raised in a church community where you could not question anything at any time. And I think that that still lingers quite prevalently in our church to a degree, where, you know, the bottom line rests on the text, and we don't give enough space for the same scripture that talks about doubting. And we do look at Thomas and others as having a moral character flaw, or just a character flaw in their doubt, where like these guys were there and walked with them. And so I think it's much more related to their expectations, as you preached on this past weekend, of what the disciples thought was going to happen. So I don't think it necessarily took away from the fact that he rose, but I think you're right. Like, what now? Like, are you still, so maybe are you still going to overthrow Rome? Like, are you good now? Because we had a bad few days. But I've really appreciated some circles I've got to be in through seminary, where it's kind of open invite to unpack what was going on what would have been, you know, a natural response to that. And, you know, where did some of these stories go? And to find out there are stories parallel to the Bible that help support some of just the history or other things that were going on in the region. You've referenced before in sermons where that's what makes the history so fascinating, is that, yes, through the process, it was determined that those weren't necessary for scripture, for the edifying of the church, but it doesn't negate their value in history mm-hmm. to unpack stories further, to carry the storyline on of what happened to these guys who, you know, carried the gospel into North Africa? What happened to, you know, the gospel going into Asia through the Silk Road? Those are all, that's all literature that's pretty cool to read.
Yep.
Just not necessary for the gospel for the next few thousand years, but doesn't make them any less interesting. But I think their absence in the Bible could cause doubt or
sure.
or just a confusion of why they're not there.
Yeah.
Why'd that story drop off?
Yeah.
Have you guys run into people where that really is the pivoting point for someone's faith journey of, like, did Jesus actually come back from the dead? Like, have you guys sat with people and had that conversation? I personally haven't run into someone where that was the, I can't think of the proper word, but aside from pivot point, where that was the deciding factor. If you could lay out proof, I've heard of people like, creation being something that was like, we can't believe the Bible because we think evolution is true. They found some different resources that they were like, oh, maybe that could be true that way too. Oh, mm-hmm. And then suddenly things started to slip into place where they believed. But I've never run into someone. I've heard podcasts where people talk about, like, how do we know that Jesus rose from the dead?
Mm-hmm.
It's not evidence.
I've never run into that person.
The question, they don't know the question to ask, or they don't know where the problem stems from. Because in my experience, it's been people who feel that their sin is too heavy, that they can't escape the weight of their sin. And so they don't know that the problem is that the resurrection, like, they don't know what happened to sin through that process. So the fact that they're wearing it and burdened by it is evidence of them not understanding what the resurrection was.
But they weren't able to verbalize and say, I'd believe this whole thing if I could.
My life would be better if I believed that Jesus rose from the dead. I wouldn't feel the weight of the sin if I just believed that. I don't think they, in any, and it's probably been less than 10, and it was always an end-of-life chaplaincy care. Like, I'm a terrible person burdened by sin, but I believe in Jesus. It's like, well, do you believe in what happened at the resurrection?
Yeah.
So that, I don't think anyone I've ever talked to came and said, I don't believe in them. I don't understand the resurrection. Therefore,
yeah,
I don't. I feel like this.
I've had a couple where there was one guy who was just like attended here for a long time, was not a Christian, and essentially his comment to me was just like, "I'm having a hard time believing all this because I wasn't there, didn't see it, can't prove that it actually happened."
Yeah,
he's like, same with the. His comment was like, "That's why I don't believe the moon landing. I didn't go there. I didn't put my foot on I didn't do it. So how can I trust that it actually happened?"
Yeah.
So I've had a few where,
in all fairness,
I mean, we haven't been to the moon. So I'm like, I hear you, bro.
I was talking with someone.
It's all green screens, bro.
I was talking with someone about that. And they're like, can you imagine that first step out? Like no man had ever done that before. Can you imagine that first step out? They like depressurize, they go to step out. I was like, yeah, it's really good that they did that in a studio first. Cause man,
it's funny. I talk to my dad all the time cause he watched it live on television, and I love poking the bear being like, Dad, you watched a great Hollywood movie. No way. If we can do hard things and we can go. Anyways, let's not go off on that tangent. So back to your question. Yes, I have talked to a handful of people that
is the,
they're really struggling with the, because like Romans 10, Paul says, what is necessary for salvation? A belief in the resurrection is necessary. And I think there's been a handful of people over the years. Usually it's people who I would say the average lost person, like, doesn't think about these things. I would only come to God if the resurrection was provable. There are stories of that, like Lee Strobel, the case for Christ, the case for the resurrection. He was literally a news reporter who's like, I'm going to prove that it didn't happen. And as he investigated the resurrection, he went, oh, it happened. And then he became a believer.
Yeah.
So those kind of stories exist. But I think that the interactions that I've had, it's people who realize something's wrong in the world, something's wrong in me, I'm exploring Christianity, and then they get to the miraculous, I have to believe in this to be a Christian. And then for a handful of people, that's the wrestle. Like, oh man, I can't just believe that like God exists and I can just trust him.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you have to trust in his son and what he's done, and that it's a historical fact. And I think that has been like a real hard sticking point for a handful of people that have been pursuing Christianity.
Yeah.
And then they get to that and they're like, huh, interesting. Mm. So it's interesting. You said, Cam, a few minutes ago, like something along the lines of like, you know, when we gather, you can't go through, here's like 5 hours of evidences. And you actually made that comment when you came in, like, I don't envy you because you have 45 minutes to
put talk. In a nutshell, what will feed the Christian of 75 years and be an introductory to somebody there you who go. Doesn't
so even
go.
So even on Easter, I mean, like, we talked about a few things about, you know, it couldn't have been that they stole the body, it couldn't have been that Jesus didn't actually die. But when you look at the four Gospels, there's so many things first century cultural wise that are going on that just lend itself to like, oh, this actually happened. That sometimes we miss, like the fact that the first witnesses of the resurrection are women. Like, we in our culture are like, who cares? We're equal or whatever. sorry. But it's massive that if they're going to make something up, why on earth would you choose witnesses whose eyewitness accounts aren't credible in a court in that day and age? Like, if you're like, no, trust us, it happened, pick Peter and John to be the first ones. Like,
they still didn't fully believe them and ran back to find out. I mean, we know who's faster.
Yeah. Because John, no one's going to know. John's like, everyone's going to know. So there's that fact that like they specifically chose women to be, not chose, that's how it happened, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't try and like, you know, to make this sound more believable. Yeah. But like, the fact that there's slight differences in all four gospel accounts actually lends itself to the credibility of it. And, you know, you've probably heard the forensic scientists and all the police officers who are like, you want differences in eyewitness testimonies, because if they're all carbon copies, you go, this sounds like a conspiracy.
Yeah.
So there's so many things that, you know, the number of Roman guards, the fact that they were all on penalty of death, if they, you know, and that, why would they make up a story if their lives were in jeopardy? And the fact that it's recorded that the chief priests are like, let's make up a lie that they stole the body. And that's been continued to, there's like so many things that can prove the resurrection of the dead or of Jesus from the dead. The passage, someone asked me that. About the, okay, who are these other people that were raised from the dead?
Right.
And I said, isn't that wild? That's literally the only verse that it says that. And then we don't hear any follow-up.
Yeah.
Like, what happened to those guys? And it says that they were witnesses to the resurrection. Like, so these other dead people started walking around being like, Jesus is alive. What was that like?
These other previously dead people.
Sure, yeah. And then they all died again. Because it doesn't say that they were resurrected and then ascended with Jesus into, like, that's wild. It
doesn't say they didn't.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But it's just one verse that like, oh yeah, by the way, all these other tombs were opened and dead people came out. Yeah. And it says that happened at his death.
Right.
And then that it was after his resurrection that they went and were like, we're witnesses. Jesus is alive. Like,
they went back and be like, where do I live now,
that's
man?
That's crazy. That's crazy. And yet it's just a verse that Matthew includes. By the way, this happened. Could you follow up and tell us?
I think a piece of evidence that people don't discuss too terribly much that I think for some people might land, for some people you might question it. One of the things that I've looked at is, you know, if Christ's resurrection isn't true, then people believing that he was resurrected would have no bearing on their lives.
100%.
There would be no reason. The claims that Christianity makes about the changes in one's heart, even if it's small degree by small degree, even if it's the peace that surpasses all understanding, like whatever element of the Christian faith that you want to put in there, I think that we would see far less results. placebos are a thing, yes, but I don't think that we would see the results in people's lives that we do. Because when you look at the world and how humans interact with other humans and how often our own wisdom gets in the way of us flourishing and being the image bearers that God created us to be, that seems to drastically change when someone makes a commitment to believe that Jesus was raised from the dead.
Totally.
Usually. Every now and then you'll run into the stories where people make those claims and they just, you're like, are you sure? Because you're not living like it. But by and large, the people that genuinely come to a saving faith in Christ, their lives look different. There's a point marker where something, they course adjust and their lives look different. And I think that that's a great evidence for that he's actually been, that he is who he says he is, that he did what he said he did. Because I don't think, even for myself, I think that if he wasn't raised from the dead, I don't think there's any reason why I would adjust how I want to live my life versus how I want to live my life. If that's true,
any of the millions of people who have been put to death, that's a huge evidence. Because you can die for a lie that you really think is true, but you don't die for a lie that you know is a lie. You would recant. And I'm reminded, do you guys remember, this is that video that ISIS of the 24 Christians in the orange jumpsuits on the beach? Do you remember that?
I do.
That kind of broke, and basically ISIS had captured 24 Christian men, and they put a video out on the internet, and it was horrific. And I watched it, though, because I'm like, this seems very important. And ISIS said on the beach to these 24 Christians, if you don't recant, deny that Jesus is the Son of God, deny everything about Christianity and convert to Islam, we're going to cut your heads off. And none of them, all 24, were like, Jesus is Lord. And then the video is, they literally cut their heads off. But I'm like, that's a massive evidence to these guys, their lives were radically changed to the point where, and I know that we have examples of people who do recant. I understand that, of people in that moment are like, oh yeah, I'm denying that Jesus. But overwhelmingly, you have people that are like, no, I will willingly get my head cut off because Jesus was raised from the dead and I believe in him, and they'll go to their deaths. So I think you're right. It's not only the life changed, but it's what happens when Christians die, I think, is an evidence that this seems to be true. And that's throughout history. In Rome, when they would feed Christians to the lions, and when Nero would use Christians as, cover them in wax and light them on fire. And many, many people converted to Christianity because they went, it has to be true. Look at what they're doing. Jesus must have been raised from the dead, because no one just willingly, as I'm dying, I'm going to pray for you as you're putting me to death. There's a change that happens in people. That is an evidence, I think.
And I think that that's exactly what the gospel teaches too. You know, when Jesus is in the process of being crucified, Lord, forgive them. They don't know what they do.
Yeah, totally.
What a wild verse. What a wild thing to pray for somebody who's committing the most heinous evil in all of history.
Mm-hmm.
And for Christians' hearts to be changed, right? Because we go from wanting to always be put on top. I think that's our natural position. Every now and then we'll still serve before your follower, right? There's people who have done great things on the quote-unquote scales of, I did good things in life. But it changes your heart posture. There's something compelling about Jesus going to his grave, going to authority. And when they question him and threaten him with the greatest tool that the enemy has against us, which is death, right? That threat of you are not eternal. You better get what's yours now.
Hmm.
And Jesus willingly lays his life down and says, I'm going to do this because I love the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so for Christians to have our heart posture switch to that is, one of the greatest evidences, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Were you going to say anything else?
No, I think I was thinking about a future episode where it'd be really interesting to unpack Christian suffering throughout history.
Yeah.
Just because of the reality that early it was, we think of Christian suffering throughout history as the evil, you know, like the ISIS attacking the Christian, where it is the Roman Church and this spurring of the gospel that's permeating through people and the resurrection of Christ being made alive, and unpacking what the Lord's Supper means and the Crusades and Christians, quote unquote Christians, causing a lot of that havoc. Future episode, unpack that, that thought a little bit. But I think it actually then still just undergirds that reality of the struggle throughout history that people have faced when they have to stand and say, no, this is what happened, and this is what I believe, and I'm willing to accept the consequences for what I believe.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
Just jumping back to what you were saying about like doubt, and I think as you read the gospel accounts, everyone was doubting.
Right.
Even though Jesus explicitly in multiple places, I looked back and I'm like, yeah, there were times when he's like, yeah, destroy this temple and I'll rebuild it. But there were literally times when he was like, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to get arrested. They'll kill me. And then 3 days later, I'll be raised from the dead. Like, you can't get more explicit. What did you mean by that, Jesus? Like, he just flat out. But then you read after he dies and is raised from the dead, everyone is doubting, like all of them, because it just didn't fit their like worldview. Like, even after is it in Luke when Peter goes back fishing, or is it in Mark? It's either in Mark or Luke, or John or Matthew.
The gospel account.
But they go to the tomb, it's empty, and then Peter just goes back fishing.
I think that's the gospel of John.
Okay, so then he goes back fishing. And then Jesus stands on the shore, and Peter doesn't even recognize him, and cast your nets on the other side. And then all of a sudden there's this like, oh, it's Jesus. So even after seeing the tomb's empty, the body's gone, their first thing was not like, he's been raised from the dead, I believe. Right. It's like, well, let's go fish, I guess. Like,
go back to what we know.
Let's go back to like, and then even like, I love that you brought up Luke 24. That story is so interesting.
I love it.
Because he's been raised from the dead, and so you have to assume that word is now spreading. The body's not there. He's been raised from the dead. Yeah. And then these two unnamed disciples.
I think one's named.
Maybe. Anyways, they're walking along, and Jesus. Oh, yeah. Cleopas. Mm-hmm. Who's that guy? He's called a disciple, but he's not one of the 12.
Mm-hmm.
Cleopas. And they're looking sad. As they stood still looking sad. So you can guarantee that word has started to spread. Jesus is not in the tomb. We don't know what happened. And yet they're like, oh. And Jesus is like, what's happened? Are you the only guy who doesn't know what's gone on? Jesus was killed. And we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. So they're like, wah, wah. Well, it didn't work.
Yeah. I love it. You're living under a rock.
Yeah, buddy. Do you not know what happened? And then they go, and then they have dinner together, and Jesus blesses the bread and breaks it, and then their eyes are open and they're like, Jesus, and then he disappears. Like, that story's crazy, and yet the thing is that they're doubting.
Yeah.
And Jesus doesn't reprimand them. He reveals himself to them, and then I think Jesus was having fun in his resurrected body. He must have been, because he's like, and then he disappears. Poof. And then they're in the upper room, in a locked room, and he just like appears, surprise. Like, so he does slightly reprimand Thomas, because Thomas just said like, unless I touch his body, I will not believe. And he says, why are you so quick to disbelieve? So there's a loving like, buddy, you've been with me. Yeah. You should know who I am. But then he says like, here, Thomas, touch my hands. See and believe. And then he says, blessed are those who don't see and believe. Like, there's so I love that the disciples are not super Christians. All of them were like, I don't know what's going on. Even though Jesus had explicitly told them, these are all the things that are going to happen. It wasn't until the Spirit was given that they then go back and go, oh, that's what he meant. what he meant when he said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I find that encouraging as we try and like help people, even ourselves, when we come to faith and we still wrestle with doubts of like, I don't know. I think there is room for that, to ask questions and to dig in. It's not a blind faith. Which I don't know, there was some of that understanding when I was growing up. Like, you don't have answers, but just have to have faith. Believe. I have talked to...
That sounds way more like a cat poster than Christianity.
Hang in there. Yeah, totally.
Just believe.
And I have talked to a fair share of people that was their upbringing. They would go to their priest, their bishop, their pastor, and they were told, like, it's wrong. Asking questions is the opposite of faith. Just believe. And I'm like, wrong. Like, it's okay to ask questions because we have like reasonable answers for stuff. Like, that's okay. Right. And faith is not opposed to asking questions. It's actually good to, like even on Easter Sunday, I finished preaching and then these two young girls come up and ask me a question. Not really related to anything I said, but they're like, where did Jesus go when he died? Where was he for 3 days? Yeah. I'm like, that's a fantastic question.
Just believe.
I said, I'm not going to answer because you lack faith. So
then you hand him that old Carmen song where he's like fighting the devil. Like,
yeah. So
from
I
the
said,
late 90s. Oh,
what we know is that he didn't suffer in hell for 3 days. However, 1 Peter says this crazy thing that he goes and he proclaims to the spirits in prison. So Jesus goes to Hades and proclaims his victory, but then he goes to paradise because he told the thief, I'll be with you in paradise. So I'm like, there's a lot of mystery, but we have some clues. And they were like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Okay, thank you. Like, so it's okay, it's great to ask questions.
Yeah.
And sometimes the answer that I give people is like, yeah, I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that. Like, because sometimes people ask questions that I'm like, I really don't know the answer to that. That is a fantastic question, but I'll look into it.
I think something too that you're bringing up is at least in my mind, it's a mark that we should probably hit on. This is that I like faith in the resurrection. I think we need to clarify too that I would be of the position, it'd be weird, but I think that you could believe that Jesus lived, died, and rose again and not be saved. Because if you haven't put your faith in that covers your sin, that makes you right with God. Historically it happened, so I think you could believe that it happened historically and not think that it affects your so I think that's something that's important to maybe clarify too, is that just because you believe it happened might not mean that you believe that it saved you from your sins. If you believe that it happened, you should probably consider why did it happen and keep down that train of thought. But the faith that we're talking about is that God did this to save you.
Except for the thief on the cross.
Yeah.
He was like...
Oh, yeah. He got in without... Oh, man. Don't stop it. Don't...
It's a fun thing to think about.
Because the faith in Yahweh is the thing that saves you. Yes. Right? Even Paul points back to Abraham. Says it's his faith that Yahweh is who he says he is and is going to do what he says he's going to do that counted as righteousness.
Totally.
It's the same thing with Christ. It's saying, I believe what God says, and I believe that he's done what he said he would do for me. That's what makes you righteous, is that then that Christ's blood is then applied over your doorpost, so to speak, so that you are covered from the angel of death.
Yeah.
And that's why Paul says in Romans 10:9, there's a confession that Jesus is Lord, and there's a belief in your heart that God raised him from the dead. And then he says, if you do those things, you'll be saved.
Yeah.
So I think if you would say like, yeah, sure, I believe in Jesus, but you don't believe in the resurrection, you can't have one without the other.
Yep.
Paul's like, both are necessary. That's why he says in 1 Corinthians 15, there it was Christians in the church who were like, I don't think the resurrection's real. And Paul's like, if you don't, then you're not saved. You're still in your sin. We have no hope, blah, 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 blah. So you're right. But you couldn't also just be like, yeah, sure, it all happened. That's great. Mm-hmm. But not be like, I'm putting my faith in that that's what makes me righous. Like, it's both.
You're
right.
You have to have both pieces. And I think that that's where then the doubt, that to circle all the way back to the front of the conversation, that's where doubt, I think, can lead you to a stronger faith. Because if you doubt something and you look into it to examine it and question it, if anything, it should build that resolve around it, right? If we trust that God is who he says he is, he might still conceal stuff from you about the depths of it, because it's God, and in his wisdom, he might not show you all the answers. He didn't for Job.
Right.
But at the end of Job's interaction with the creator of the heavens and the earth, he said, yes, okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm the created one here, so I'm going to trust you.
Yeah.
That's not verbatim, but you get the idea, right?
You weren't there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's good. Awesome. Well, hopefully that's been helpful and interesting. And I think it's a good topic to talk about after Easter, because you're right. It's all fresh in people's minds. Good Friday, what Jesus went through, Easter Sunday, Resurrection Day. You have 45 minutes each day to just kind of like, yeah, this is what happened. Believe the gospel. And then there's all of these extra things that you're like, oh man, there's so much that happened. So hopefully that's been interesting. Episode 140. And if you do have other questions or things that you want us to address, shoot me an email or text any one of us. Yeah. And
if you invited anyone for the Easter weekend, invite them this weekend for a journey through Romans.
Yeah, we're starting the book of Romans, and it'll be good. So talk to you next week.